Yes, you've arrived at the Legend Podcast at DaxMyhan.com. How did I become a legendary sports figure? How does anyone become legendary? It starts with a coach. Join us as we have conversations with coaches of all ages, experience, and expertise, and find out what does it take to lead athletes to legendary status.
Really, you do have a lot of useless knowledge up there in the head of yours.
Part 2, Billy Chumbler.
Well, Coach, so you finished your college career. So let's go to your first coaching job. Was it Century or
right? I had at Century High School. I had actually signed a contract at Louisville Moore, and Louisville Moore was just starting their high school, and they had gone up to their junior class, and then they added a grade each year, you know, and then they would to play varsity ball next year, but. It was at Mr. Klepek was the principal, and it was the assistant job. And he interviewed me for like an hour and a half, and he said, the reason I'm taking so long to interview this is because he said, I don't believe in going out and getting a head coach. If my head coach leaves, I want to boot my assistant up, and I want to make sure that he's got the credentials to do that. So he did. He liked me, and he offered me the job. But back then, my wife was also a phys ed teacher, and that back then they had a rule in Louisville, probably still do, where husband and wife can't teach at the same school. And so she might have been 20 miles away. And so we go back, and of course, you know, that's what we're still planning to do, and Century called and wanted to know would I be interested. So I went over to Century, and I met with them over there, and they told me, they said that they had already hired the coach back that was there, but we're trying to get him to resign. If you'll take the job, we're going to try to get him to resign, you know. And they said, you and your wife both can teach here. So we could both teach the same school. So anyway, it wasn't that far from Paducah. And I thought, you know, and actually the pay in Illinois was better than Kentucky. And so the head coach wouldn't step down. He said, I just want one more year. He said, one more year. And they said, well, what if we give you the same salary? I first make it, he said, what if we make y'all co-coaches? I said, no, sir. I said, I don't think that'll get it, you know.
Too many
cheese. Yeah. And he said, what if we give you the same pay as a head coach and promise you the job next year? I said, that sounds good. But I said, what if we have a good team? They said, oh, we've never had a good team. And I said, well, what if we do? And they said, so what do? We had a good team, good record that year, and the coach had 25 and he wanted to stay. But they fired him and gave me the job. And of course other coaches looked at me like, oh yeah, you know, you got this guy. I didn't have anything. That was predetermined before I got there. So I stayed there 3 years and we had good teams and still stay in contact with a lot of those kids. And
you and I have a connection, which we found out later. You coached a man who later coached me, Mike Tickey.
Oh yeah. Mike Tickey was, he was a senior that year, and Mike Tickey was, and then he was a good basketball player, but better known for baseball. And so anyway, I took him. Coach Reagan at Murray was a good friend of mine, and a lot of people know it, but they hired Coach Reagan to coach basketball at Murray, but he never did become the basketball coach.
You know, I played for Coach Reagan. When you told me that, I had never heard of that.
Right. And so anyway, Coach Reagan was super. So I called him and I said, Coach, I said, we've got this player here, this pitcher. They say he's real good. And he said, Bill said, can you bring him over one Saturday? I said, yes, sir. So I brought Mike over on Saturday and Coach Reagan had one of his good pitchers. And so they sit there and they pitched and then Coach Reagan called me over there and it turned out Coach Reagan had played AAA ball with Mike Tickey's father. And so anyway, his name was Bill. He said, Coach, he said, I can't believe that's Bill Tickey's boy. And I said, why is that? And he said, his mechanics are wrong. Said he does everything wrong, you know. He said, come here and look. He said, see my pitcher? And he was showing me how his fastball with me. But I don't know much about it. I couldn't tell. I'd say, but anyway, then he said, so I took Mike home. And I said, Mike, I told him, you know, I've been always honest with athletes. And I told him what he said. And he said, I didn't tell him that he did everything wrong. I just said, he said, your fastball wasn't moving. And he said, Coach, you're right. It wasn't. Some days it does and some days it doesn't. And so he winds up going to Martin Junior College. And turns out the junior college All-American, and of course Reagan wants him. And then he comes back to Murray and pitches for Murray. He wound up pitching a no-hitter against Purdue. And then Reagan makes him his assistant coach. And then when Reagan left, he moved up to head coach.
Yeah, I played for him. He was my pitching coach when I was at Murray State.
Oh, he's super nice guy. And he played hard in basketball. He wasn't a great basketball player, but he was hard-nosed and tough. And there was another player right behind him, Gordon Hamm, who went on and pitched at Oral Roberts. And he was a good basketball player.
So you move on to Caro, and of course, ultimately successful.
We finished up. I had five teams in Illinois. The Sweet 16, they call it the Sweet 16, the state tournament, but the first round games are played not at Champaign, but at different venues across the state. Ours was played at SIU. As a matter of fact, we had 13,000 people at we played El Dorado a couple of years at the super section. They call it the super section, but it's the first round state tournament. And that goes down as records in the state tournament or whatever. But I had good teams there. Of course, I had good players, and I remember Greg Starrett played at UK, and then he turned down and went to, and then he went to he played with Issel, which Starrett did, and then left there and played at SIU. But very good shooter. But he was an announcer at Marion then, and we're getting ready to play Pinckneyville in a super sectional, and we had split during the year. They had beaten us 92-91. Christmas Eve at the El Dorado tournament, and then we'd beaten them in the Benton tournament. And of course, they were asking where the big court was going to help them or us, you know. And of course, they said, "Oh, yeah, that big court will help us because we can spread them out and they got more ground to cover." And of course, they asked me, and I said, "Oh, no, it'll help us because we got plenty of room to recover too. If we get beat, you know, we can get back, you know." And he talked to his coaches. I remember Greg's talking to me before the game, you know, and he said, "Well, what do you think, coach?" And I said, "I'll tell you what I think. We're going to try to take the coaching out of this one." I said, we're going to try to run them down the floor and press and do as much as we can. But they didn't know whether it would be better, you know, to play us a zone or a man, you know. And he had talked to several coaches that called me and said, "Dick's calling us. He doesn't know what to do, where to play you, blah, blah, blah." So anyway, he started in a man-to-man defense. And we went right inside early. I had to get me Anthony Webster. It went on to Bradley, and we went inside. We scored, and we had them 10-0. Well, they went to a zone. Well, we got the ball. What do we do? And Carroll's definitely not nobody for holding the ball. Yeah. But we did. We spread it out. And, of course, they had to come out then and chase us, come out of that zone. And it never was a game after that. Yeah. But we played really up-tempo, to say the least. And matter of fact, in the Chicago paper did a story on the top teams of the decade in the 80s and 90s. And we were – top 10 in both of them.
That's awesome.
Oh yeah.
One of the main things about our podcast and our website that we are really interested in is, you know, obviously coaches make a huge difference when you go. And so when you look at what you did at Century, a school that had really had never had a winning tradition, and you come to Caro and you win the way you did, there's obviously a method to that madness. What would you say is the key to coming into a program and changing the attitude?
I think players need to know that you care. And if you do that, you can really discipline kids and get away with stuff that normally you might not do. You know what I mean? I think if you go in there and you can't fool kids. You know, they know. Matter of fact, let me go back to this. Marshall County called me the next year after they fired Charlie Lampley.
Yeah, and the year after y'all had played them.
Had beaten them, yeah. And they asked me for an interview. So I came over here and did an interview, and it was a lengthy interview. It got down, actually, to Ricky Leeper and myself. And Ricky wound up getting the job. He's a very good friend, too. Anyway, one of the questions they asked me, they said, "Now, Coach," it was a woman on the board, and she said, "Now, Coach," said, "your coach, primarily black kids," said, "do you think you could coach white boys?" You know, I thought, "Man, are you kidding me?" I said, "Ma'am," I said, "I don't know what you think, whether you think I take a whip and beat them or what," but I said, "I try to be fair with them," and I said, "Do I treat them the same?" "No, because they're all different." I said, "Some might respond better to praise, some criticism, but it's getting to know your players and in the home and wherever, and that's what I always try to do. Of course, she said, you'll have to admit there's a difference, you know. And I thought, oh, crap, you know. But anyway, they said, and one of the questions they also, they asked me, well, I won't get them. But anyway, it was kind of off. But they said, now, Coach, said, you came over here and you beat us last year. Now, if you were coach of our team, what would you have done? I don't know. I said, it's easy for y'all to sit in the stands and look down there and say, I do this or I do that. And I said, I didn't have him in practice. And I said, then I might have done exactly the same thing. I said, furthermore, I said, Charlie Lampley was winning the state tournament when I was in junior high. And for me to say what I do at his team is kind of absurd. And of course, they didn't want to hear that, you know. And Rick got the job, but it turned out fine.
Yeah,
you know.
Worked out for you. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, like you said, if you don't have him in practice, you don't know what.
No, I didn't know a thing. I didn't, and Scott and Marston didn't know we were going to play him until they called, you know, and they hadn't played a game, you know, and so I had no idea what to expect. Yeah. But I knew they would try to play up tempo because Charlie always played up tempo. I knew they would do that. But no, I think it's key in Oregon getting good assistant coaches. I've always had good, you can talk about a lot of things about assistant coaches, but loyalty is probably the most important, you know, and I always had loyal assistants that weren't, you know, behind my back or whatever, you know, and at Tillman, Brad Steig, and then I, of course, had Mike Bray, who went on to Alton, Illinois, and a lot of my coaches' assistant became head coaches, but, and then I think you've got to show the kids you're going to do, you're going to fight for them. And for everything. And we played a great schedule too. Like at Tillman. I know a lot of people thought, you know, oh, Coach Tillman, he recruited this player. I'll tell you right now, I never recruited anybody. Our schedule recruited for us. I mean, we played everywhere and good teams. And so if you're with Heath or Lone Oak or Reedland, well, where are you going to go if you're a good player? You're going to go to where you can get seen. We played the King of the Bluegrass and just all over anybody. I mean, one year played Chicago Westinghouse too. We've always played in the Hoop Fest and kind of disappointed Tillman's not playing in that now because if you look at that record book, you know, I mean, we did quite well.
I filled it up.
Yeah, we did good. And,
To your point right there, you know, I think a lot of schools and maybe a lot of coaches are really concerned about winning or losing. But, you know, from my standpoint, and you and I talked a little bit about this before we came into the interview, you know, I don't think you get better playing inferior talent teams. No, what it does to play better teams.
Even if you lose, believe me, they're a lot easier to coach the next day in practice after they got beat, you know, than if they win by about 30. Plus, it tells you what you need to work on if you get beat by one, you know, and there can be no great victories if you don't play a great team, you know, and nobody remembers your record. They remember who went to the state tournament and how you performed and all those little things you do in practice as far as, you know, as a coach, making them play hard. There's a kid out here just now, Rodney Houston. He said, Coach, there's nobody up here that played harder than your Carroll kids. And I said, well, maybe so. I said, they did play hard. You got to admit that. But it was in practice that started, you know, and I never had anybody. You know, I had a rule, if you miss practice, it was 100 laps, you know. But I never had to enforce that. I never had to enforce it. People, they just came to practice. You remember Orlandis Hill played for me, good player. Yeah. And his father was a good player for me at Carroll. And his father was the leading scorer in the state tournament in 1981. And I remember out in my front yard one time, I'm on the yard there on the Jefferson Street in Paducah, and his mother stopped by, and she said, you don't know me, but she said, I'm on Orlandis Hill's mother, and she'd gone to Meridian, which was our rival at Carroll, and said, she said, we're going to send Orlandis to play for you next year. And said, Philip works at plants at Calvert City, and he was driving from Bardwell there. And she said, and by the way, I want you to know he's going to be better than his daddy. And I thought, well, I'll tell you what, he better get up, you know, but because his dad was quite a player, but he did turn out probably better than his father. But getting back to the practice, I go to practice one day, and he's not there. And I said, where's O? And Fred said, O said, tell you he was sick. He won't be here today. Boy, my face got red. And so I took Steig and I said, you go to his house and you get him right now. I said, if he doesn't get over here, I said, he's not playing this weekend. And so anyway, he got him. Of course, Orlandis came in. His head was all down like he was deathly sick, you know. And I said, let me tell you something. I said, if you're sick, I said, you come see me face to face. And I said, don't be ever send anybody to do that again, you know. And I said, you've got college scouts that we're going to see you this weekend, and I'd be glad to tell every one of them why you're not here, because you missed practice too, you know. Yeah. But I never had that problem again.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that right there. And one thing, I've heard Coach Kyle Perry say this, and I think it's great. He said, you know, the things that a coach can, people say, well, how do you control this ball player? How do you make this ball player do what you want? And I heard Coach Kyle once say, I have the key to it. I control playing time. Oh, and that goes to what you're saying. Oh, what a motivator.
Yeah, and I had a kid here in the hoop fest one time, and a very good guard. We're playing Evansville, Modern Day, or whatever, and he lets somebody around him on the baseline and doesn't cut him off, or, you know, and I took him out, and he walked by me, and he said, forget you. And I about crapped my pants in. I said, yeah, you're right. I went down and I said, you're right. I said, I forgot you the rest of this game, I tell you that. So he sat there the whole game, and we won without him. And I said, you see how much we needed you? We didn't need you, not one bit. He said, Coach, I'm sorry, you know. And we're best of friends to this day. Yeah. But these are lessons. And if you have rules, too, you have to enforce your rules. You know, if you've got a rule, you know, you can't bend it, and where coaches sometimes say, oh, okay, I'll be punishing the other players if I don't let him play. Bull. Right, he messed up, and you need to get on him, because he's the one that let you down. He knew the rules, and that's what they are. We're not going to bend them because, and oh, by the way, he might be my best player, you know. But
don't you think, too, the breadth, and, you know, looking back at your coaching career, had you bent those rules early in your career for this one or for that one, that kills your credibility as a coach, and ultimately would have kind of brought you a downfall.
Oh, yeah, and I think the players at Tillman knew about my Carroll teams. Of course, obviously playing against them that year before, you know. And then the Carroll kids, I never would have left Carroll if they'd done it. But I would, you know, because I was a counselor at the junior high, and those kids would come up and they'd say, Coach, you're going to be there when I'm there, aren't you? You're not quitting, you know. And I probably wouldn't have. But it worked out pretty good. And then at Tillman, when I went to Trigg, you know, same thing. They had never done anything, you know, and we came over here, and we realized it, but we beat Charleston, Missouri up here in the Hoop Fest, and they won the state that year. Didn't lose again. We beat Union City one year. The only game they lost all year was here at Trigg County. I'm talking Trigg County.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Trigg County's not exactly, I mean, other than, you know, maybe Al Baker is the old star football player, they haven't sent a whole lot of guys. Maybe Radford, right, was a ball player, but really not known for their athletics.
No, and when I went there, too, they were, I'm telling you, I just couldn't get over it. They were the same way. You know, they had the long hair. I met with Miss Knight, and her husband was a superintendent here. And she was my principal, and she promised me she would support me, you know. And, you know, I was going to just retire and go to the lake because in 2002, because that's the farthest Tillman had been. And I thought, and when I met with her, and I said, no, you're going to support me. I said, when I put these rules, she said, oh, yeah. She said, I just want them to look like your Tillman kids look, you know. And I said, okay. So anyway, two of my best players, little Jones brothers, Jeremy Jones and the other kids, said, well, they had long braided hair, you know. I said, you got to cut your, you know, I said, you got to cut your hair. I said, that's it. And we always wore, and we noticed it, but we wore blazers the games. I mean, we were old school. Yeah. And so anyway, when, you know, I tried to go out and get them the best uniforms, the best stuff like that. And so anyway, the mother came to Miss Knight, and she said, Coach Chumler's going to make my boys cut their hair. What are you going to do about it? She says, well, I'm not going to do anything. She says, he can do whatever he wants. She said, within reason, you know, said, they don't have to play basketball if they don't want to, but if that's his rule, that's his rule. So it helps when you get administrative support, and instead of a principal that comes to you and says, no, we can't do that, you know.
And you know, speak to that. I mean, obviously, for you to have had the success at every school that you had, there had to be great administrators behind you.
I did. I really did. And I had a great athletic director, Taylor Sparks, at Trigg. He was one of the reasons I went there. And Miss Knight supported me. And when I was at Paducah, same way. Paducah was – people don't realize it, how strict Paducah was, you know. I mean, and we had more rules on our athletes than other schools. Like, they had to have a C average to play, a C average. And where in KHSA rules said they have to be making progress toward graduation, where – after I got into that, I kind of liked that. You know what I mean? And I think I sent you a picture Michael Jordan sent me one time. I had my second year at Tillman. I had all my players on honor roll. And he sent me a and the reason being, I would be practicing, and you know how you swap up with the girls. The girls go early one day and one week, and so I'd be in there early practice, and they would come in there at 5 o'clock, and I'd still be going over stuff, you know, because it was new, and she'd be looking at her watch, you know, and I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I said, I'm going to let you go early every day, and I'll take late practice. So I let her go early, and I told my players, I said, what y'all going to do? You're going to go study hall. You know, we're going to have study hall. Oh, they said, they just rebelled. You know, they said, well, what if we make the honor roll? I said, well, if you make the honor roll, no, you don't have to go study hall. Well, what happened? They all made the honor roll.
You set expectations. You set a goal.
Hey, that was a stroke of luck then, I would tell you right now. And anyway, Michael Jordan sends me this big plaque. He heard about it congratulating me on my academic achievement. I didn't do anything. I just had a lot of smart players. Matter of fact, my assistant coach just ran the study hall, you know, and I was out drinking a Coke somewhere before practice, you know.
Talking about Tillman real quick, let's talk about, you know, you had a pretty magical run to that state finals. And you know, in Kentucky, obviously basketball, I mean, that it is, we are the sport. It is
right.
The sport, I should say. And talk about how special it was to get to that title game and just kind of your memories of that state tournament.
Well, that was great. The three teams that went were all great, to say the least. And to be there my second year at Tillman, and we played – you know, after that, my first year, after that, won 9 games the year before and beat North Marshall in the final, or meet Marshall County in the finals when they had Story and Lange and that crew, and they beat us in the finals. And I never will forget Kurt Childs going down the court and saying, you know, that we played at Murray State. And of course, it was packed and we had all kinds of people there. And he said, I've never seen this many Tillman people in my life at a game. But they stuck with it. And then the next year, you know, we had all those players in honor roll. And then we beat University Heights when they were ranked number one in the nation, not state, but nation. They had Isaiah Victor, went to Tennessee. They had Barnes that went to Temple. They had Swanigan that went to Notre Dame. And then they were just loaded. And they came in there and undefeated and won the Beach Ball Classic. And then we beat them. And then we get ranked actually in the nation my second year there. We're like 16th or whatever. But we go there in the state tournament, and then we Marshall in the finals the next year, and we beat Marshall County, and then we beat Marshall County in the finals the next year. We played Ashland the first game, and as a couple of kids got foul trouble when we lost. Of course, Ashland then went on to the finals and got beat by Van Hoos and that crew there. But that was a very good team. And then the next time was with Brett Jones in 99. We beat, you know, we played Scott County. We'd beaten, a PRP who hadn't lost a game in Kentucky. They had not lost a game in Kentucky. And we beat them the second game and then turned around and played, Scott County. And then Scott County, beat us in a controversial.
Rick Jones
was on that team. And then Scott Hundley also. They had two Mr. Basketball. Hundley was Mr. Basketball the next year. Yeah. Speaking of Britt Jones, he was a great player. And as a matter of fact, he had something in his locker that said, today's preparation is tomorrow's success. And you don't get players like that. That mature.
Great shooter, too.
Unbelievable shooter.
I believe he still holds the record for threes in the hoop pass.
Yeah, he had 9 here one time. We played Chicago Westinghouse, we're playing Chicago Westinghouse. They had 42 against them. We're tied at halftime. And it looked like they had 10 guys on the floor. You know, Chicago kids, how quick they are, like those Carroll kids. They were everywhere. They were swarming us, and the coach was over there, you know, big Husky coach. And I went over and I said, Coach, I said, you got to call that press off, you know. And he said, I will on one condition. I said, what's that? He said, you take that white boy out. I said, no, I don't believe I'm going to do that. But Brett had 25 at half, wound up with 42. But you know, he could shoot. But they would jump at him, and he'd let it go, and he'd just go, go right in. I mean, he wasn't born a shooter. He wasn't every Saturday morning. He had a key to the gym. He'd be in there shooting. Of course, he won the state in golf. He was a great golfer, and that's what he chose to do. But, you know, I'm not trying to brag, but he's the only guy that could really beat me shooting. I mean, he could beat me shooting because he would back up about a step or two behind the, a line there.
Well, he was quite a bit younger than you, too.
Yeah, but I can still shoot. I'm not trying to brag. I don't know whether that affects my shooting, but I will get out there and play those kids sometimes.
Well, you know, John Bolton, who I worked with at the phone company,
oh, yeah.
He's your official scorer, I think.
Right.
He used to tell me stories about you. I guess you would maybe tell the kids if you can outshoot me free throws or something.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to run or anything.
Right.
He goes, he never lost.
No, I didn't lose to me. They would that. But they would always be tired about having to run because I had no pressure on me. But but no, I still could shoot good.
Yeah. So talk about that state title game. And talk about your, I guess, kind of your the way things went and your experiences at that.
Well, it was probably my. It wasn't my best team at all because we had. Actually, had Chris Clark, who later, he's a doctor now, went to Tulane. His father was a doctor. I had Chess Gibson. I had Ryan Wagner. And Ryan Wagner had held Chris Lofton to 4 points in the state. And I'll tell you what, we won our first game, and I forgot who we beat the first game, but we're going to have to play Mason County the second game. And of course, Doug Lyles, your coach here,
yeah.
He came by me, and kind of sarcastically said, I guess you're going to play man to man too tomorrow, aren't you? And just laughed, because Mason County had set a record of 3-pointers. I said, matter of fact, I think we are. And, we did. And I'm telling you, Ryan Wagner guarded Chris Lofton and held him. And he just kept pushing him out and pushing him out. And here Ryan was a white guy, 6'1", just not fast or whatever, but, could guard you. And then I had Brian Hamilton, and I had Fred Perry, and then, of course, the big O in the middle. Yeah. And all those guys could shoot the three, and a lot of times we'd run what we call 4-on-3, where they would exchange, and I'd just leave that whole middle of the floor for him to operate, And he was very good if he got it high, kicking at the weak side and stuff like that. And, we played Louisville Mayo. Then the next, we beat Mason County, and then Louisville Mayo had not lost a game in Kentucky either.
Bush on that team?
Bush was on that team, and I put that same guy, the guard Lofton, on him, and Ryan Wagner. And I told Ryan, I said, now if he tries to take you inside, you're going to have to step down and help him, if he takes you inside. And so one of my worst fears, Orlando's got 2 fouls the first quarter, but I could not take, I'd play him a little while. Put him back in. Of course, Bryce Hibbard was the coach there. He coached in Reedland.
Former Reedland coach.
Reedland coach, you know. And come up to me after the game. I said, I'll tell you why I won that game. I looked down there and I thought, we're playing Reedland, but believe me, they weren't Reedland. But they had a guard, too, that was very, very good. But he couldn't shoot outside, but he could really drive. And I put a kid named Brian Hamilton on him, and Brian did a – unbelievable job as far as he would back off of him and when he would cut him off and not let him get to the lane. And we couldn't have played much better. And they had a big center. I forgot what his name was, and we went. And then we play Lexington Catholic in the finals. And of course, it's not a very good way to do, you play that morning and then you come around and play that night. And of course you're really in it. I'm talking to Randy Bay, but advantage if you live in the town like they did.
Yeah.
And, so anyway, we at halftime, I think we're saying, well, the good part, I said, we're only down 4, but we're not, we're down 4 and we're not playing very good, because we'd missed a lot of shots. In the second half, we just kind of, they got ahead of us 12 or 13 and it was early in the first, maybe in the middle of the fourth quarter down to and then, so I thought, well, I'll tell these kids, it's the only chance they'll ever have to play in state. So I put my subs in and we wound up losing by 20 something, but it really wasn't that kind of game.
Right.
You know what I mean? But,
right.
I just felt like that they had worked hard and they deserved to get a chance to play in Rupp Arena.
Well, and I'll say it so you don't have to say it. I mean, you really are playing an all-star team when you play some of those.
Oh, yeah. They were unbelievable. Like you said, that 1 year too, when we had to play PRP and they had, who was the guy from Louisville? Dr. Dunkenstein.
Griffin.
They had his nephew on the team. They had a Griffin and they had another kid that was going to Penn and they were just loaded. And somebody said, are you going to run with them? I said, yeah, we'll run with anybody. Well, we were down like 20-6 to start the game, and Madison Central's playing. They have SDL and everybody wanted to see the games, but there was no place to hide. I was looking on it. I wanted to hide somewhere. We called a timeout and went to a 1-3-1 zone, and wound up winning that game 46-43. They didn't score, but 20 points the rest of the game. When they got cooked, they never seen them 1-3-1.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I would like to say one thing. You know, I've been blessed, to say the least, to go to schools where – to be able to go to schools where the players would listen to you. I wish every coach could have the opportunities I had.
It's a thrill for me to get to interview you. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, I enjoyed that. When I help Hopkinsville, the coach and I are very good friends. And I go over there in the summertime and went to call him in Florida most of the time, wintertime. But we came and scouted the game last night, too. I helped him, Tim Hayworth. And a lot of his kids, the kids at Hoptown, remind me of the kids I had at Carroll. You know, they're hard-nosed and quick. And not the kids at Tillman weren't hard-nosed, but they're...
He's a Graves County kid, right?
And we also had something in common. We were bitter rivals with Hatcher. Hatcher cut him, actually.
And, really?
Hatcher cut him, and then he went to Mayfield and played a little bit in Mayfield and went back to Graves.
And he walked on, I guess, at Murray State?
Yeah, that's right.
And I remembered his high school, it said, like, Graves County or whatever, and I thought, man, I don't remember.
No,
that
he got good, but Hatcher, get back to Hatcher. Hatcher was a very good coach, mm-hmm. and we had some good battles. But I got to tell you this one story: we're playing them my last year there when I had that good team and with Orlando Hill. Anyway, we're up, I don't know, 17-16, which is a lot for Hatcher going into the last quarter. And of course, Hatcher scouted you so much that he knew when you started to call a set or whatever, Bench would call it, and the players knew where you were going and all that. So, of course, it was a timeout, and we didn't have to call anything. We had the ball coming back in, and I told him we had this little play. We ran for Orlandis where he'd come off a couple of double picks, and the guy thought he was going to shoot it over the goal, and Orlandis would come in and tear the goal down. Well, we ran that thing. It was at Graves County. Orlandis comes around there, and he tears it. Dude, I mean, just Hatcher ran all the way from his bench all the way down to my bench in front of me, you know. And he says, "What in the hell are you trying to prove?" And I said, "Coach, I said, you better get out of here quick." And the referee came over, and he says, calm down. I told the referee, "Are you scared of him or something?" He said, "I'm not scared of him, and I'm not scared of you either." And I said, "Obviously, you're not scared of me." But I said, "No, he's down here. He's in my box." But anyway, after about 4 minutes to go, I took him out. And of course, he came down thanking me after the game. He said, "Well, now think about it. Now you would." I said, "Coach, you would have beat me 20 if you could. Don't even act like it, you know."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
would you say, and you know, because I played for him, and I know how much he scouts.
Oh, like, yeah, unbelievable.
Would you say he probably, from a scouting standpoint, was he one of the coaches that scouted your team more than anybody?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And the only thing I hated about it, when we would go, of course, Joey Fosco would tell me this, when we'd go in the state tournament, it's kind of like a guy had that T-shirt that said, "I'm for Kentucky and whoever Louisville plays." Well, Hatcher was for Graves County and whoever's playing Tillman.
Yeah.
But hey, you got to respect the guy. I mean, he was a winner.
Yeah.
And another thing I liked, one time Paducah Sun did an article on the players, the school that had the most, how many players that were playing college ball now, you know.
Yeah.
And at one time at Carroll, I had more kids playing college ball than all the first region teams combined.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah,
even that they went to, you know, they didn't all go to majors. They don't know a lot of them went to mid majors, junior college.
Yeah.
But at least they went to school, you know.
Well, you know, I played Legion for Doc Heidig back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we've interviewed Doc.
Oh, yeah.
And one thing, you know, that Doc always told me, and I love Doc like a second father. He's crazy, but I love him to death. And one thing he always told me was, he said, "You know, I feel my goal here is not to be a baseball coach." He said, "My goal is to, one, be a father figure to these kids,
right,
and teach them right and wrong." And he said, "Try to get them into college somewhere." And he had told me, and of course, baseball, there's more opportunities for scholarship. Mm-hmm. But in 20-something years, every kid that played for him had an opportunity to play college baseball somewhere. Now, some of them didn't.
Yeah.
But they had an opportunity, and he said, "That's what it's all about."
That was the thing at Carroll, being a father figure more so there than anywhere else, and being able to, you know, try to guide them in the right direction. You were talking about winning and all that, but what That comes. But if you do all the other things, the winning comes. The winning,
you know, comes. We've said that a million times on this podcast.
Right.
If you do things right, winning comes right.
It's going to come. You know, just like when the kids cleaned up and got this, when they were proud of themselves, you know, when they've worked hard in practice. And I could just see it, you know. I knew, you know.
I think back to, and I want to say this, back, you know, when I was here at Marshall, we had some really probably that was the kind of the golden era, along with a little bit of the Lange era.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was kind of our golden era as a Marsh County High School.
Right.
But, you know, I remember we walked into every game believing that we could beat you. You know, we beat
Oklahoma. Yeah.
But you might be better than us athletically, but we felt like we were good enough to beat you.
Right. And when we walked in games, too, we walked in as a team and looked like a team. After I quit coaching, I would go to the place in Paducah, and I'd work with kids individually, you know. And I remember the guy that ran the place came by one time. I probably could have had 100 kids if I wanted, but I would just take 4 or 5 an hour, and I did that for a while. Of course, we just worked on fundamentals, and then, of course, mentally, well, I talked to him about the other stuff, too, as far as looking right, acting right, being coachable, and all that stuff. But he came by, and he said, "Coach, that's old school, isn't it?" I said, "Let me tell you something. That's the way it's supposed to be, buddy." I said, they've got to learn these fundamentals. I said, "You can't just throw the ball out and just let them play." And, you know, so like one of the guys that we were playing a tournament one time, he said, "Those Cabral kids seem like they make the right pass every time." Well, they have no idea how many drills we run with the pass break and stuff like that. It just doesn't come natural.
Coach, man, it was a pleasure. If you enjoyed the podcast, which, why wouldn't you? You're listening to The Legend. Tell somebody about it. Well, what I need you to do is you share it on your Facebook and then get your friends to share it.
Or you've been listening to Dax My Hand, The Legend.